T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, I covered this a little bit with my father, but the Purple, the Vikes, most interest in that company in this state, nothing's close. So if you think it's just sports, well, they play sports. But if you said, which business enterprise in this town generates the most conversation, it's the Vikings, and nothing is close. So I know Adam plans on charting the game. He plans on conducting Facebook Live on the Chad Hartman Show off the Vikings' first preseason game. But I got two topics for you. And I deal with both of them with my father here in about 90 minutes. So you can listen to my father's thoughts on it. Let's start Case. They faced a situation off last year when Bradford gets hurt. Keenum had the first awful game in Pittsburgh and then was great. He was great the rest of the year. And I know he was not great in Philly, and he threw the pick six. I'm sorry if you think Case Keenum was the biggest issue in Philly. I got one word for you. Defense. I'll give you a couple more. Harrison Smith, right? But did he rise up and bring them? No. But I thought Case Keenum last year was, I don't know, B+, A-. So what do? Do you re-sign Case Keenum or you go after the fresh, fancy new guy, Kirk Cousins, who we bonded with out at Mall of America? Again, if you see him, he's like so much smaller than you would think, right, Carter? I mean,
yeah, he was not terribly physically impressive.
No.
Good-looking guy, though.
Good-looking, good big teeth.
Yes.
Big teeth, right? They went Cousins. They went 3 years, $84 million guaranteed, $28 million a pop. Case gets 2 years, 36. He gets $18 million a pop. I would argue they probably could have got him even for a mill or two cheaper here. Now, if you told me I have to say which one is better, I guess I would lean ever so slightly to Cousins. Ever so slightly. I think Cousins is, we got 32 teams. He's about the 14th, 13th, 15th best quarterback. Keenum was every bit as good as that last year. But if you're telling me I can get Keenum for 2 years and then I save the $10 million and I don't save it, I use it on other players, I would have re-signed Keenum. And if you would have told me that a year ago, I would have laughed at you. I would have said he's just a backup. But for the first time as a pro, he had a very good team. He made plays. He bailed out that offensive line endlessly last year. So I think Spielman overall has done a good job. I think they blew it on this one. It's a tough one to answer because I guess you'll never really know who else they would have added. But when we look back on it, we're not going to draw much conclusions off Saturday. Which way should they have gone? Committed to Keenum, committed to Cousins, and you know, you're set for the next 3 years? Or roll the dice a little bit and say, hey, the case we saw last year is the case we're going to see for the next couple of years?
I think at the time I agreed with you, but I don't know. Maybe it's just the offseason.
Come around.
I feel more confident that the consistency Kirk Cousins has shown, even though he's not, you know, an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, I think he is a good quarterback.
But the value, that's where I go, $28 million. That's such a huge chunk. I mean, you're paying
it
now
a huge chunk.
You're now paying a guy who's not a top 10 quarterback, in my view, I think in your view also, $28 million. Every penny guaranteed. So then I get to the offensive line. So I think you got to put this. Nick Easton's Nick Easton. And my father, at one point in the interview, and I got to jump in because he says Zimmer claimed he was unbelievable last year in their best offensive lineman. He wasn't unbelievable.
Nick
he wasn't.
Bonacani?
Yeah, I mean, got to calm down. So we all overreact a little bit in August, but they are sitting here without Easton. They are sitting here without Elflein. They're sitting here without Remmers. I think Elflein's very good. The other guys are essential. They haven't made enough of a commitment to the offensive line. How panicked should people be at this point?
Fairly concerned. I don't know about panic.
It's too early,
yeah,
to panic,
I mean, because last year, remember, we thought the offensive line was going to be terrible.
They were terrible in preseason.
In preseason, too. Like,
unbelievable.
Man. And they turned out to be a pretty good offensive line.
They were good.
Yeah.
They were good enough to get to them in the championship. Yeah. I think they should have made a greater emphasis in the offseason, mm-hmm. and that's where I go up to like $10 million. So I'm not as up in arms about Nick Easton, but the overall emphasis the last couple of years, I think it does stand out. Speaking of the NFL, now we'll tie it to politics. The protests are back. The president is chiming in. Are we going to start this thing for the entire year again? How's it going to play out? It gets a reaction from folks. Last year, it became a regular tweet from the president, a regular rallying cry at events, including insulting vulgarity towards the players. This is a number of players, first started, of course, by Colin Kaepernick, protesting, profiling, and police brutality, which is a very legitimate discussion point in this country. I am someone who believes overwhelmingly that we have an overwhelming number of excellent officers, but the data says there's way, way, way too much profiling of people of color in this country and police brutality. So if I got to pick a side, I can do it that way. I can believe in a high majority of officers, but to act like any profession doesn't have problems, including ones where you have the ability to abuse power and target individuals, you can do both. Kaepernick did this after consulting with an honored member of the military on how he should protest. And it's so funny how people conveniently forget that. It has cost Adam, no doubt, Colin Kaepernick, his career. Can anyone argue the other side? Because I don't think it's possible.
No way. Now we were just talking about the amount of money they give to quarterbacks.
Yeah.
People who are absolute backup quarterbacks still making millions of dollars. Here's a guy that went to the Super Bowl.
Right. And he had slipped. That is clear-cut since. But the idea that he shouldn't be on someone's team the last couple of years as a backup is laughable. And to act like it's just a coincidence, you're just lying to yourself. So, the president, over and over, owners, a lot of them who politically agree with the president, are fearful of the president, are worried whether this had some effect on the numbers, which dropped. By the way, they dropped, and they're still better than any other programming out there. And it played some part. I don't doubt that. To what percentage? Nobody really knows. Because the numbers had started to slip before this. So the NFL tries to come up with a compromise about, you know, you don't have to come out, stay in the back, we'll leave it up to teams to punish. And then once the Dolphins announce the possibility of what they would do, the backlash was so strong that they said, well, let's table this and figure out what we're going to do. Well, now we had our first full week of games, which apparently Adam's girls were held hostage because he was breaking them down to me in text last night. Like, it's like you had the super dish and you were texting me on multiple games.
My favorite night of the year. Opening night of NFL preseason football.
What has happened? 13-12
games on the slate.
If they were playing in my living room last night, I would not have watched. So we had Dolphin players who knelt behind their teammates. Robert Quinn raised his fist. Malcolm Jenkins raised his fist. It was Jaguars, New Orleans, and a number of teams saying, basically, I'm sorry, Mr. President. This is a problem still in our country. To the shock of no one, the president tweeted about this. Would we all have just guaranteed that this was going to happen? Two tweets from the president. The NFL players are at it again, taking a knee when they should stand proudly for the national anthem. Numerous players from different teams want to show their outrage on something that most of them are unable to define. We'll get back to that in a second. And they make a fortune doing what they love. Be happy. Be cool. A football game that fans are paying so much money to watch and enjoy is no place to protest. Most of that money goes to the players anyway. Find another way to protest. Stand proudly for your national anthem or be suspended without pay. How does he have any idea if the players are unable to define? How does he know that? What player who has spoken out about this has been unable to define it? You know who's been a maestro at putting this out there in a way to try to define it away from what the topic's about? Donald J. Trump, Adam. It's, oh, these guys hate America. That's what they're doing. No, they're rallying to their fellow citizens, and not all of them, because there have been many Caucasian players who stood up, and many of them African-Americans, saying, gets a little old when I'm driving, because guess what? I've made some money, and I've got a car, and I'm pulled over. Or what's going on? And that doesn't mean every time an African-American is pulled over or arrested, it's racism. But it's too damn high. And if you don't think that, pull your head out of the sand. Then he adds, most of that money goes to the players anyway. Yeah, sure. Most of it. It's 50-some percent. Check the value of these teams. Ziggy and Mark Wilf. You think it's think it was tough for them when they paid, what they pay, 600 and 800 mil? Crazy amounts of money. And now the Purple are worth over, you know, well over $2 billion. And the money they put in the stadium, they basically got almost all of that back. So are we in for this as a regular event throughout training camp? Are we in this for a regular event throughout the regular season? I don't see any sign the players are going to stop to step away. Because now, Adam, with the president chiming in, I think the players can be even more resolute, saying, no, don't tell me I have to go stand there. I'm doing this as an example of what I'm allowed to do as a citizen of this country. And as we said this when it happened during the offseason about, was it about 6 weeks ago when Brett Kavanaugh was named as a potential future Supreme Court justice, when Michael Bidwell, who's now the owner of the Arizona Cardinals, used the Arizona Cardinals website, which is an enormous platform to him, for him to tout what a great guy Brett Kavanaugh is. So the whole Laura Ingraham shut up and dribble? Well, guess what? Michael Bidwell took his opportunity to use his platform, so he's a fraud. What's your guess? How prominent will it be for the next 4 months or so, 5 months?
If they're doing it in the first preseason games, it's going to be with us all season long.
Yep. Is he going to keep tweeting?
Yes, absolutely.
Are the owners going to?
Fires up his base.
It does fire up his base.
Absolutely, especially with the other things going on. People can focus on the disrespect of the U.S. flag and the anthem. It's catnip.
It is. It's like Heinze to women. It is catnip for his voters, because people just assume if you're standing up for something and you're doing through the national anthem, you hate America. And that's just total nonsense, in my view. They are using...
Or if you're a Democrat, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, text away, call away. Right now you can get in. 651-989-9226. Are we headed for this for 4 months? Do you think the player is going to back away? Do you think the players should back away? Do you think the president should back away? Do you think owners should back away? Do you know what the issue is about? Because half the techs who come in your call have no idea why the players are protesting. And when you tell me about military veterans and how offended they are, I don't doubt some are. I've talked to many, many others who say, absolutely, you're allowed to do it. We had one in studio a couple weeks ago who happens to be a former governor, and he spoke out on the other side. So I want calls, I want texts. Where do you stand? Are you bothered by it? Do you love it? Is the message delivered improperly? Has the NFL screwed this up? There's all sorts of ways to go. 651-989-9226 or 81807. Okay, lots of texts coming in. We'll get to those. Let's get to caller two also, Aaron Murphy. One of five people left who will be the next governor of the state of Minnesota. She is the DFL-endorsed candidate, matching up with Lori Swanson, who certainly is in the news. We had on Rachel Cohn the other day from The Intercept on these stories, which I don't want to say dominating that race, but playing a big part, and also Tim Walz. So Aaron Murphy in 10 minutes. Paul is mobile, and he's calling in. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, with the NFL players taking a knee for the during this, the national anthem, to me, it's not like they're turning their backs on the country. It seems like more that they're playing more homage, more respect to the soldiers that have fought and died for our country than anything else. I mean, people see what they see, but when you're in church and you kneel, that's not disrespectful. So why is the NFL players that don't want to stand like a bunch of robots, and why is it when they want to use their free mind to kneel and pay homage to the people that have died and fought for the country for their freedom of speech, do we shun them?
I think it's a very fair point, Paul. Now, Adam, it's already coming in twofold. Do this on your own time is one that we hear a lot. And also, what would happen if you did something like this at your job? Because people who run a business, own a business, get to set up a lot of guidelines. When you have people who are the employees, who are this essential to the business, they get to dictate a lot. Let's just be honest. The whole idea of let's just go back to the salad days of this radio station. Charlie Boone, Roger Erickson, and Steve Cannon were about as big a knockers in radio as it gets. You think Cannon was treated the same as whoever was on earlier or afterwards? Or other, when Cannon was, and I love Cannon, but when Cannon was being a giant pain in the ass, you know what they said? That's Cannon. We're not going to do anything. Yep. When Roger was the angel that he was and Charlie was the irascible one that he was, they did that. So that's a part of it. On their own time, a little bit early on, remember when we first started talking, I thought, is Kaepernick putting himself in such a position that he could do this separately? And I just came around quickly saying, if he does this on Tuesdays, who's talking about it? That was the whole point, to spur a conversation. And it just, that part of the conversation gets lost so often. That's the sad part about it to me. What do you want to say on those 2 points?
Well, I just... You nailed it. I mean, right? You argue, you know, if I do that at my job, they'd fire me. Well, yeah, but you're not as essential at your job as these guys are in their job.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Right.
And what was Jesse's point too? Was his argument that these are public, now because there's so much public money in these stadiums that this is public property somehow?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Far-fetched, but
yeah, you know, I'm not sure about that one. Robin is mobile. Go ahead, Robin.
Well. Okay, this is my view on it. The Vikings never kneeled last year. I don't think they're going to do it this year. I mean, they're a class organization. They were one of the only teams in the NFL to do that.
Hold on a second. Hold on, Robin. I got to stop you right there. So you're not, if you are trying to stop police brutality or racial profiling, that means you're not classy? How is that possible?
I don't know what, I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with standing and proudly being an American for the national anthem.
Really? So using an opportunity to protest isn't an essential part of being an American, wouldn't you say? Haven't we watched protests and allowed us to be different than so many other nations? And when you have a business where I think the rate of players is about 65-70% African Americans, and they watch individuals who look like them or themselves treated in a way that whites aren't treated, they shouldn't have a platform to speak out about that?
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. You know, if people would follow the rules and treat authority with respect,
sure,
like we were taught when we were growing up.
So that every time an African American is pulled over, it's because he or she isn't following the rules.
Seriously. Yes, there may be a little bit that way, but you know, I mean, they're bringing into this a whole bunch of people, you know, the people that have been killed. If you listen to if you would have listened to the authority in the first place or not had a gun and been shooting up a neighborhood or a house or whatever,
yep.
You know, and there's white people that are doing the same thing. They just don't get the publicity on the news or because they're white.
Robin, I know a lot of people agree with what you just said. I'm glad you listened, but I can't even tell you how much I disagree. So thank you very much. I think it's insulting to what happens to a lot of African-Americans in this country that it's just because you're being disrespectful. That's it. That's you're not paying attention to authority. That's the only reason why you're pulled over, even though the data is overwhelming. John's in Maple Lake. Go ahead, John.
Just a very simple comment, and not on one side of this or the other, but the person who won't stand for the flag has never had to receive a folded one.
How do you know? Because there are many veterans who have spoken out in favor of this. People who've lost loved ones. You believe that? More power to you, but I can line up so many vets who disagree with you. So to act like everybody feels that way isn't true, John.
Well, when I say received a folded one, I mean the one that draped the casket
I know
of your
that.
Loved one.
I know that.
Have you ever had to do that, Chad?
No, John. But have,
then you're
so
lucky.
No,
that.
I'm incredibly
very
lucky. But
lucky.
You're acting. I'm unbelievably lucky, and I have great support for everybody. And John just hung up. So that was cowardly of John to do it. But Adam, we know this: that there are thousands of veterans who don't agree with John, and this whole idea that all vets are that way is just a lie. It's just not true.
And we forget that also that Colin Kaepernick initially was sitting down during the protest, and he was instructed by a veteran that kneeling is much more respectful than sitting down.
Correct. And, I mean, Robin's comments. Dan, what do you want to say about what Robin had to say?
I just, you know, I think you hit it, that a lot of people think what she thinks. I just, it's, if you live a day of your life, as a minority in this country, your experience is vastly different. That doesn't make anything that white people have done wrong,
yep.
Or, you know, the whole notion of white privilege isn't anything people have done wrong. It's just being aware of, you know, the color of your skin dictates so much about yep. how you're treated in this country. And to have at least a little bit of empathy for that, I don't think is going to hurt anybody.
Very well stated. A lot of texts. I'll try to get back to them, but I don't want to be too late because Aaron Murphy's going to join us rather soon.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We reached out to all of the candidates for governor over the last week plus. Three of them made themselves available. Tim Pawlenty and Lori Swanson did not. We are chatting right now with Aaron Murphy, who is the DFL endorsed candidate. And she is battling Tim Walz and Lori Swanson in the primary, which will take place Tuesday. Plenty of coverage on Tuesday and certainly on our show Wednesday. Aaron, thank you very much for coming on. We talked to you right after you had won the endorsement. So let's check in now. How are you a different candidate today than you were months ago?
It's really wonderful to join you this afternoon. And I'll tell you, I have been in this race now for 20 months. 20 months. Talking with Minnesotans about our future and working to build a campaign that is ready to win an election and a coalition that's ready to build our future. And the conversations that I've been having with the people of the state, not just in this campaign, but in the decade before, have prepared me to do this job, and I'm ready to lead the state. And I'm really excited that we're just about to the primary election day.
Anytime you have a primary, you're going to have, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, where a lot of people end up agreeing. And I have no doubt you, Lori Swanson, Tim Walz, on a huge percentage of issues, have the same type of ideas. But when you've watched the two other candidates, and I know you've debated more with Tim Walz and you have Lori Swanson, give me the single, or maybe it's even two areas, where you stand out the most, where you have a very different view from them that will resonate with Democrats when they vote next Tuesday?
Well, there are two very clear issues, I think, where we are quite different, the three of us. And one is on healthcare. You know, my background is nursing. I'm a registered nurse. I'm a mom as well and a state legislator, and have now for 26 years been working in healthcare in Minnesota and across the state. Minnesotans are really frustrated about the state of the healthcare system. I am the only candidate in this race that has a plan to put us onto a path for single-payer health care, and I believe that Minnesotans should have health care that they can count on, especially when they're sick. And in our market-driven system, it is often the people who are sick, they're getting the short end of the stick. We're going to change that and put care ahead of profits and build a health care delivery system that serves Minnesotans' needs. That's the first difference. And the second is on the issue of gun violence prevention. In 1999, I joined a board of an organization called Citizens for Safer Minnesota. It is the first work that I did on gun violence prevention. And I believe in a state where kids don't have to come to school and practice lockdown drills and where parents don't have to worry about their kids being harmed in a school. I'm the only candidate in this race who has for 12 years gotten an F from the NRA, and I am the one in the race who's prepared to stand with Minnesotans and against the NRA, who's got too much power inside the Capitol right now, and advance common sense solutions like universal background checks, no exceptions, red flag laws, and banning the future sale of assault weapons here in the state of Minnesota. It's important that our kids are safe in school. It doesn't mean arming our teachers. That's what the NRA wants to do. Both Congressman Walz and Attorney General Swanson have consistently been getting A's from the NRA. They've been doing their homework and the extra credit. The big difference between the two of us, and that's why it's important that we're talking about it.
I want to get back to health, but since you raised those two with the NRA, let me specifically zero in on Congressman Walz. He went from an A grade with the NRA to an F grade. He has said he reacted to the NRA changing and reacted to the events of what has taken place. Do you agree with that, or do you think he made his adjustments because he's running for the governor's race and felt like politically for votes he had to change?
You know, the NRA is the same organization they were in 99. They're the same organization they were when I first took office and when he first took office, as they are today. And they have outsized power inside the state capitol and inside the Congress. And while I've been working with elected officials inside the House to advance solutions, he's been standing with the NRA. He's been in their videos, earned their endorsement. He's taken their money after many of the major shootings that have happened across the state of Minnesota. And so I'll leave it to the voters to make a decision about why he's making this change. But they should know from me that I understand the power of the NRA. I understand how it is getting in the way of Minnesotans and their desire to advance common sense solutions. And I'm going to stand with Minnesotans and with young people across this country who are demanding urgent action on this issue. I'm with them.
Aaron Murphy is the DFL-endorsed candidate to be the next governor of the state. And Aaron is kind enough to join us here at 144. Let me ask you about the Lori Swanson story this week. We had here on the show the reporter from The Intercept, who initially had the report of up to 8 unnamed individuals who worked in the attorney general's office, who said that they knew to move up in the office that they were going to have to do political work in nature, and that it was a given that others knew that. We now have another individual who spoke out Thursday at The Intercept, DeAndre Norman, who backed up and said any employee of the attorney general's office who chose to participate in the political process. No, this is what the spokesman said. Let me correct myself. Said that it's exactly right. That everything in the story was exactly right. The spokesman, that was my fault. Said any employee of the attorney general's office who chooses to participate in the political process does so voluntarily on their own personal time and not while on the clock for the government. Who do you believe, Aaron? Do you believe Lori Swanson, their spokesman? Or do you believe these folks who feel like they were pressured in what they had to do while working for the attorney general's office?
I think that this is a credible story that Minnesotans are going to have to work their way through in the next 4 days. But when Minnesotans come forward and offer this kind of testimony, there's a good reason to believe them. I am frustrated that the attorney general has been deflecting any responsibility on the issue, or really deflecting any engagement in the discussion of the issue. And
unfortunately, I'm going to put her on hold, Dan. Why don't you check? Because I want to give Aaron Murphy the opportunity. We've all been there. Phone signals, they're breaking in and out. Dan had a quick conversation. Sounds like she's back in. All right. Representative, thanks for coming back. We just lost you for a second. That happens. Don't worry about it. What you felt, you said this is a relevant story, and then continue from there.
Yeah, it is. I think Minnesotans are going to have to sort through it. for themselves and make a judgment as they're considering for whom they're going to vote. But when this many employees who had worked for the Attorney General come forward, I think that proves there's a credible claim that should be considered. And I am frustrated that the Attorney General tends to deflect away from the actual story, put blame on other people. She did that when the story around Congressman Nolan emerged, and she's doing that again here, not taking her own responsibility for what's happening. And I think Minnesotans are looking for elected officials who are going to actually stand up for Minnesotans, but also take responsibility for their own actions. And I'm worried about that. And so I know Minnesotans are going to take a look at this. They're going to make a decision, but I think there's a credible claim there.
Let me go back to how we started this on health care, because I asked you to differentiate yourself from the candidates, and you talked a couple areas, but health care. And we're seeing this a lot with many Democrats in the state and across the country on either single payer or Medicare for all. For those folks who are skeptical that the government can run this, and also skeptical that the cost will be extraordinarily high, what do you say to them? And many of these folks don't love what we have now, but they're wary what this path might turn out to be.
So first and foremost, I have the experience in the head and the heart to actually get this done. I have been working in this area for many, many years. And as we proceed on our path to single payer, we're going to show Minnesotans with our work what we're capable of. I want to open up Minnesota Care for anybody who wants to buy in. Use a provision that I put into law in 2010 that's already being employed and has saved the state modestly about $200 million. That allows us to contract directly with our providers, with our nurses and our doctors, and move the health plans out of the middle of that contracting relationship because they're using their powerful tools to deny people care for their bottom line, and that's no good. The current system now, the market-based system, is not transparent. It's driving up costs for people, and Minnesotans are paying extraordinarily high prices for their medications, for their deductibles, and in some cases with their lives. I met a man named James Holtz, his son, Alex Smith, insulin-dependent diabetic. He was 26 years old. He couldn't afford his insurance and his deductible after he came off his parents' insurance and rationed his insulin, and he lost his life. Insulin has been available since the 1920s, and it has quadrupled in price in recent years, making it exceptionally expensive for people. And that is a canary in the coal mine story. It's time for us to grab hold of this, take the profiteering out, and put care for people who are sick front and center. That's what I'm going to do when I'm the governor.
All right. Now let's talk gun laws, because I know the three of you debated earlier on NPR. And Lori Swanson pushed back at you on the gun situation and said, you're speaking out on this, but why did it take you so long to author legislation on guns? Does she have a valid point?
You know, I started working on this issue back in 1999. So I have many, many years of experience working on issues both inside and outside the Capitol. So she doesn't have a credible point. I think that's a deflection once again. The Attorney General has worked with the Supreme Court on amicus brief standing with the NRA. She's earned their endorsement, and she's enjoyed their support. And that has gotten in the way of our ability here in the state of Minnesota to make meaningful progress on behalf of families and children. And that's what I'm going to do when I'm the governor of the state of Minnesota. I'm going to stand with the people of Minnesota and work with the people of Minnesota, bring their powerful voices to bear on a legislative process that has been too tied to the powerful voice of the NRA. That's what we have to break. That's what I'm going to do.
Let me ask you about another part. I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but I think NPR normally does a very, very good job with them, so kudos to them. At one point, it appears from some of the tweets that you may have been skeptical when Lori Swanson said she wanted to meet with all 201 legislators if she won. Is that a fair reflection? Doesn't that make sense to have a meeting and try to build up a working relationship that way?
You know, I have strong working relationships with my legislative colleagues, and that's important. And she should break bread, as she says, with all 201 legislators. Where I feel skeptical is the ability to change the dynamic inside the Capitol by having dinner with people. Because what's holding our ability back from making progress for the people of Minnesota is not a relationship with legislators, but instead the powerful hold of the status quo interests inside the Capitol. And frankly, it's going to take Minnesotans' powerful voices working together with me to change the trajectory of the state. And so when she says that, I understand the goodwill of that, but I am skeptical. In fact, frankly, don't believe that by itself will change anything inside the Capitol in order to make the kind of progress that I believe we need to make for the people of Minnesota.
But are you going to be able to work with Republicans? Because part of what I think a lot of people are tired of, not everybody, is that you can be principled, you can believe in stuff, but in the end, we need to get more done and not have more special sessions.
So I have a track record of working with Democrats and Republicans. When I was the majority leader, I worked with the legislature, Democrats and Republicans. I worked with Governor Dayton to put the budget back together again after Tim Pawlenty left us with a $6 billion budget deficit. And we got our work done on time, passing an ambitious agenda for the people of Minnesota. We got it done because I worked with then Minority Leader Kirk Dowd so that we could get that work done in time. When I turned Tim Pawlenty around on his veto of general assistance medical care, my partner in that was Representative Matt Dean, a conservative Republican. When we share values and we work within those values, we can make progress together. I have a track record of doing that. I will be a governor for the people of Minnesota, and we're going to get things done for the people of Minnesota.
And you can read an op-ed from Governor Dayton endorsing Erin Murphy in the Star Tribune today. Erin, as always, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Former Majority Leader Erin Murphy. It's 1:52. That is your Lindis Construction Time Check. Time to call Lindis for free home improvement estimates on windows, insulation, and leaf guard brand gutters. We're done for the hour. Plenty more coming up next hour. What was that noise?
I'm imitating your father. Previewing the 2 o'clock hour.
Yes. You want to do my father at, should I interview you as my father before we air my father? That's coming up next hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.